that's it. I mean, I can try to look for Jumbo if he's here, but.
Yeah, we get started. So we start with the instrument as the instrument we created in this class. And this is the question that we have. So I think from Alien's talk we conclude that the maximum power we can sustain in advanced LIGO is probably more than what we expected, because it looks like we can suppress SEGITA and Earthbound distortion better than we thought. So what's your, what's your most realistic number on that? On the suppression factor?
The suppression?
Yeah.
Okay, so the number that I had in my talk was 65, but then,
But just, I mean, what is the basis for this kind of thing?
Yeah, I can. So it's all about the shutdown and the high frequency.
No, I meant, what is the basis for that number 30, or why isn't it 300?
So why is it 300?
You know, there should be some sort of a kind of equivalent of like noise budget, but instead like a wavefront distortion budget that shows for these particular Zernike polynomials, this much error comes from these effects. But if the argument is something like, well, we made this Zernike here one time and this is what it did, that's not really it. That's not at the level of these calculations.
Yeah,
that's
it.
But still, so what does it mean? Do we need more work on that?
Okay.
So that will be the future work session. Future work.
Can we define it a little better?
Yeah,
what's the job? What's the future work?
Yeah, right. So it's that equation that Adam had is work.
Basically, we want to get the loss to be less than 10 ppm, so it just means that we need to get that particular number should be bigger than 300, like 300 or 500 or something.
Yeah, so we would like to have
what's the loss in the arms?
Well, we want to have 10 megawatts in the arms, so
okay. So if you want to, you see, if you follow this equation, so if you want to have 10 megawatts in the arm, it means that you are if you keep same absorption at AI design, then you should have 300.
Yeah, I think that some of the problem is this is all based on silica.
And this is all for silica, so Voyager is nice.
This is
for silica.
Yeah, I just mean for this equation, indeed, maybe 1 or 2 megawatts is all you can handle. So then,
why so?
I don't know. I'd say if it is, then I could imagine basically if you get this K now kappa to 300, you're okay for 1 or 2 megawatts.
Oh, if you can get it to 300, you're okay to 10 megawatts.
No, because 1,000 ppm is not okay.
Oh, I see. So, yeah, so why would you take 1,000? So that's for the following reason. So it's hard to go below 1,000 because 1,000 comes from the, you get around 1,000 due to folding. So if you don't want to use parabolic mirrors, if you use spherical mirrors, so due to folding, you're folding in the single cycle. So you already lose.
Right. That answer depends a little bit on the single recycling finesse.
Yeah, finesse is one thing, but also falling. So since your mirror is spherical, and then you have this like small angle of.
You're suggesting there's asymmetries in that?
Yes.
That's also not fundamental.
That's not fundamental, that's true. But you see, we have parabolic mirror for QCS, and it's not great.
Not valid argument. I also have really terrible spherical mirrors in some place, like at my home, but we can in fact make good ones.
So you see, another...
And you know, of course, if you make the SRC finesse be like 1, then the loss in the SRC doesn't really matter.
But then you need to make it 1.
Well, you don't have to use this particular design. You can just use something else. This is just one candidate for high frequency.
Yeah, what about that?
You can see to it next when you see Voyager.
Yeah, but Voyager is same. Okay, so you for this design. In fact, if you go to Voyager,
I mean, you're just trying to reach 10^-24.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not that hard, right?
What's the number for your new curve?
I'm trying to SSH right now.
Okay, so maybe I can show my hotspot with hotspot.
I'm gonna use your phone hotspot to get my Voyager nose curve.
Yeah, you see, we are.
If it's not to be.
You see, we are at the 10 to my a little better than 1^24, but a significant fraction of this is classical noise. In fact, we can reduce quantum noise further, but then the total sensitivity won't improve very much. So for Voyager, that's a different thing, because the classical noise will be significantly smaller.
Why is the classical noise going up again?
So that's because of PI damping.
Oh, right.
So,
I plan to have zero noise from the
Okay.
That's my design choice.
You see, this design is realistic.
That's what everybody says.
That's true. But we also justify that choice.
Yes.
Anyhow, what I'm saying that it looks from Aidan's talk, that we can reduce sharp noise, the function noise, blue line, even further down by maybe another square root of 2, so that this red curve will go down to maybe 8^-25. I think from that point.
But then the PI part will go back up. PI noise will go up.
Which noise?
No. Just if you try to make the laser power higher, then the PI noise will go up.
PI noise, okay, that's true. So we assume that PI noise is not dependent on the R power. So we assume we just glue this PI dampers, and then if we have some higher parametric gain with higher power, then we can look using active dampers. This is our assumption.
I missed what you said, sorry. I was.
So we now design, we assume that we glue PI dampers, which should prevent us from having more than 3 PIs up to 5 megawatts. And then if we go to higher power, then we dump all the other PIs using the technique we use right now, active damping.
I guess what Rana is looking for is what he drew on the blackboard the other day. I was referring to what
yes.
he drew on
the
other the blackboard.
Yeah. Me and Zhao will have elliptic filter PI damping system.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Mm. Well, anyhow, so if so this green curve is classical noise, so the high frequency part is the This is the islander. So you can achieve this. We win somewhat, but not too much, because the poaching from a noise scale, also gas density noise is not very far as well. Of course, like in Voyager, you can assume some better vacuum. You probably assume 10 to minus 9, or?
No, I have something like 2 times 10 to minus 25. It's a gas density.
Yeah, okay. So we have some similar. Yeah, okay, so we assume 3 times minus 5, and you probably assume something similar. Yes. Yeah, that's right. So you see, 2 10 to minus 25 is already gas phase noise, and you have poaching noise.
Well, I don't have poaching noise, you have poaching noise.
Yeah, your poaching noise is a factor of 2 or more, and that's more. This means that in Voyager you can get 2 10 to minus 25.
Yeah. But it's
too
quiet in
here.
Okay.
He looks like he's sleeping. Turn his volume on. He looks so happy.
Do you want to explain your slides?
It sounds like there's any audio. Do you want to explain your slides?
Well, we should finish with this.
Yeah,
PDF discussion. So
I'm sending you a PDF now so you can display it.
I don't have internet.
What?
I'm not connected. I can't connect to the internet.
Mine's working at the moment.
Yeah, but somehow I can.
Maybe you got blocked. Some security problems.
No, sometimes I can't connect to it right now. So, what I'm trying to say is that...
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm trying to say that in order to get this curve, okay.
So you can show the PDF I just sent you next to that that
yeah.
curve.
Yeah.
And then maybe we can talk about the differences.
Yeah. Okay.
So I can certainly see that correction factor can be improved. I mean, we basically made warp sufficient to achieve the requirements, but it didn't get pushed further in the design. I mean, we made what was good enough. So we can certainly see if there's room to improve the model.
Do you have internet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Also, Juan is providing free internet through his phone for anybody who wants to log in and use his bandwidth.
Only for this image.
What?
Yeah, that's a little better. But so in terms of squeezing, how much loss do you assume?
100%.
5%.
Injection. So there's 5% injection loss plus some, you know, all the usual losses like arm cavity, SRC and stuff. But 5% injection means like Faraday, U-force, and this kind of stuff. Photodetector quantum efficiency is 95%, which is, it's, you know, it means 99% with a few percent loss of the mode matching.
So I guess your detected fusion will be around 10 years. Okay. So see my thoughts?
And Jack 20 in my thoughts.
Yeah, but just to have a fair comparison, because we say we detect 12.
Yeah, I just don't calculate it like that. I just use the standard Wink software, so we can just compare our parameters just like. I don't use this like secret Haixing Miao Mathematica code. I even shared my parameters with the LIGO HF team. Well, so this one has some problems, I'd say. So this is basically, I just wanted to see. Are you kidding me?
What's that?
I just wanted to see what's it take to get 10 to the minus 24 in the region. You know, how can you maximize the sensitivity at 3 kilohertz or something like that? And this is without taking into account Haixing's new thing, which is the SRC phase, which he added today. So this is just a broadband system, basically, and at the low frequencies, it's limited by this thermal refractive noise in the substrate, which is the silicon substrate. And that happens because the arm cavity finesse is made very low. And so the signal recycling cavity finesse is also very low. But this is not meant to be optimized for, this is only 500 megaparsecs for the binary neutron star range. And it's emphasizing instead the high frequencies.
But how old is all is your finesse?
All the parameters in the legend. Temperature transmissions and so on. No? Maybe not. Let me see.
So why is so reflecting noise so much?
Because he removed out cases.
Not removed, it's the ITM transmission is 1.5%.
Oh, no, that's fine. This is CMF design.
Yeah, it's just, in the Voyager design, it's much different. To get rid of the thermal refractive thing, the ITM transmission is like 0.1%. So that the thermal refractive thing is low. You can see in this one, the thermal refractive and carrier density noises are high because I allowed this thing to happen. But this makes it less sensitive to the SRC loss.
Yeah. But then you can clarify the SRC loss. For Voyager, it's hard to do GCS.
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. But what is the SRC loss?
It has a low frequency problem, but also it's using 500 watts input laser and 9 megawatts power in the arm. But I think, as Hartman said on the first day, 20 dB squeezing injection is, 20 dB detected is super hard, but 20 dB squeezing injection is not, you know, it could be achievable in 10 years.
But that's already achieved.
No.
Yeah. I mean, this.
This is after the LPA
yeah.
efficiency thing. So I think the best observed squeezing is 15.
Yeah, that's because you have extra loss, more matching to local common line.
Yeah.
But out of OPR, it's 20 dB.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess if you have such a high loss, if you just replace the squeezing to 15 dB, you wouldn't change so much, no?
Probably. Whatever. I'm just saying these factors are kind of a little bit beyond what's demonstrated, but achievable, I think. And it's just a high power thing. So because it's the heat load from 9 megawatts is going to be something like 65 watts of heat absorbed in each mirror. So that has to be conductively extracted with some metal straps or something like that. So anyway, the whole low frequency performance would not be good.
So how much slower can depends how much lower you think that the point was? So if you also use 10 megawatts, 9 megawatts.
Yeah, so we can get this, you see that the blue curve, he is already approaching to the green line, which doesn't change. So we can improve blue by another maybe 10%, but then red will not improve that much. Maybe it will be like 8 × 10⁻¹⁵. So.
Yeah, but I guess in this one your curve is going up like almost f squared.
So here it's f squared. So you can also try. You can also use this feature of this large resonance, and then you will also get a little deep, and then we go as f square.
Yeah. I don't know if that's desired. I sort of felt like if we want to catch some of this high frequency stuff, then maybe we want to be for sure. We want to be sensitive at 3 kilohertz. Then probably a couple of harmonics would be good.
Yeah,
that's true. When you see the, if you look at the spectrum, then the PMOS there, high frequencies are already so low, so that you either continue opening up your bandwidth to high frequencies or. So I'm trying to say is either F or F squared probably don't happen. But you see, that's one of the questions for the workshop. What is the cost function for this thing? I'm still not sure I understand it.
Yeah.
So I think, Andreas will try to see what kind of physics we can extract for this or that particular curve, or an optimize.
Yeah, I suppose we should supply the data all the way to 20 kilohertz or 15 kilohertz or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Or rather, the noise curve.
So, how does such a thermal reflective scale scale?
No, it does not.
But unsurprisingly, it's that fine.
Yeah, it scales with the arm thickness.
So, you for polynomial design, you have like 5 times higher arm thickness.
5 times. I don't know what to call this design. I tell MATLAB to optimize something and then it gives me this plot. In this case I said optimize the 3 kilohertz sensitivity and this popped out. It's not like I decided that 1.437% was the optimum.
So this noise scales linearly with arm thinness, right?
Yeah.
Because I think the SRC loss scales the square root of arm thinness.
No, it's just the phase noise that you get on the field is independent of, it just depends on the absolute temperature and the index of refraction. And then the more the arm finesse, it means the less you care about the Michelson area.
Yeah, so you see the SRC loss has R balance in the denominator, and so it really is sort of the square root of the balance. So I think if you increase our financial factor of 2 and then improve this low frequency, then you won't move much. Well, anyhow, this is all some cost functions. So yeah, coming back to the original question, from what is the so what drives this numbers, for example, for the suppression of IGN distortion. So for a LIDAR we have 30, we have 70. That's exactly it. So the we say what is the optimal power that returns the best sensitivity. So right now it's around 4 megawatts, because if you go higher power, you get higher sensitivities. So if this number can be increased, they can go to higher power and then get even somewhat better noise. So I think if you want to reach 8 × 10⁻¹⁵ for QC beta, then this number should be around 100. Or alternatively, we can reduce photon absorption. So here we request 1 ppm. If we go to 50 part per billion, then we can keep TCS IDs and then also reach 8 × 10⁻¹⁵.
I still think you've got to improve all these. Absorption should be half of this, and the K kappa should be 10 times better.
Thanks. You see,
you're just giving up too early.
Well, I can explain why. You see, the TCS and LIGO, you kind of just works. You just turn it on and somehow magic happens. And we take it for granted. But in vivo, it just somehow doesn't work. And then you realize that it's kind of difficult. So it's still not really working yet. Still trying to improve it. So then,
that argument is orthogonal to my point.
Yeah.
I just mean, you can put a few extra actuators to take out the last bit. So once you have a factor of 30, all you need is like a 1 or 2% really weak thing that takes away the last piece of the wavefront distortion. It doesn't make it impossible to use. It just gives you the fine-tuning.
Well, that's true. On the other hand, we also need to correct for Sagitta.
Yeah.
So then probably need
that's
to...
That's what I'm talking about, the ring heater. So you would have the thing I said, the segmented ring heater. So you could handle the astigmatism as well as the non-spherical component of the sagittal. Basically, if you have two rings in your ring heater, then you can heat a little close and then a little further away. And then you can take out a parabolic thing instead of just a spherical thing. Assuming the absorption is uniform. And then also the coating can be re-optimized to make less absorption. No problem.
Yeah, okay. So I think this is interesting. So I don't know, do you wanna go through the slides? Anshin, would you like to explain your slides?
Are you interested in that, or?
Are you guys interested in optimal configuration?
Just two slides.
Just two slides.
I just thought, yeah, we were talking about this, and I just said, put together sensitivity. And then, you see, now we can look at the traffic peaks, and then in this, in the context of fundamental limit, then you can see that the squeezing, high power, and internal squeezing, which is internal fundamental squeezing, or the outer spring effect, can be, you know, also viewed as internal squeezing. And then the synchronous acting and the carbon resonance we just discussed. And finally, the long armament can just view it as the approach to increasing the energy fluctuation. And then, how do you shape the frequency dependent? That's the approach which I'm so, like the speed meter, it turns out that it actually makes the power partition in such a way that it's very low at DC and increases function frequency. And so, speed meter is a way of, shapes power partition. And then, yeah, we have a space model 3. I think I made a mistake here. It's not a cancel power partition at DC, it's actually cancel power partition on test mass at all frequency. So, and it takes the not only just the frequency dependent but also gives the effect of the partition rate is kind of distributed over the whole optical pattern. So and then finally the optical filter, it just increases the power partition to at a different frequency. If you have a narrow-banded tuning, and then you have one broader readout, and this is why they have it. And then, like, the frequency-dependent readout turns out to be necessary, in some cases, to reach the fundamental limit. In general, then, for example, with speed meter, at low frequency, to reach the fundamental limit, you do not need the frequency-dependent readout. It turns out it's some optimal quarter. We have also used the fundamental limit. That's why, you see, all the same techniques, depending on how you combine them together, you might need or might not need frequency-dependent readout to reach the fundamental limit. And the final point that, all this techniques so far, you know, the limits of loss. And we have also got the factor limit, which is even higher than the one that's
on the measure of low frequency, so it's a pressure person method.
But nevertheless, the fundamental limit does give you a kind of benchmark of how good your sensitivity is. Yeah, if you achieve the principles. So,
a friend that you're going to visit.
And then the next slide is to give you some automatic
information.
Series the fundamental limit is nothing but the so-called sensitivity. Because after you use the frequency dependent readout, remove the back action, and then you get so forth.
This is not a spectrum, this is just probability.
And then it all depends on
just one
parameters, like the power weakness,
how much
it does
it change the equation,
and
what
the bandwidth of
plausible.
So here I assume like 1 kHz. Of course, this one I have it made by the channel efficiency, sensitivity, and the bandwidth. In principle, can go away. So you don't have, here, like, if you increase bandwidth, means the sensitivity becomes worse. But if you have, wider cavity, then you can go beyond this chain. And the next point is that. No, we do like somehow, in addition to the external squeezing, we want to use internal squeezing. Now, it seems to be quite difficult for the controller squeezing because it has this 1 over f squared law, simply come from the fact that the test mass response is 1 over m, f squared, which is a free mass. And you can see that only low frequency. It's basically still the application is around the around 10 temperature for for the children's match. So you want me to follow this really, say, you know, at high frequency, you might be the test that really like. I think the
we could have a
Tomorrow.
We could have a frequency dependent mess.
Wow, that would be so awesome.
We could you
know what?
We could have a basically as you can go to high frequency, you could have the mass get smaller. Basically at DC, you use the optical spring effect to have a bunch of masses stuck together. So you have a huge mass.
Mm.
And then at high frequencies you're sort of bypassing some of these spring paths.
Mm.
So the mass gets less and less. So you have more ponderomotive gain at high frequency.
But he's already tried to do that. Can't. So if you can do that, you can do that.
We can do it. Why not?
To make a frequency dependent mass, you need radiation pressure.
Yeah, that's what I
mean. And then you need a lot of power to
At DC, we have like 10 pendulums stuck together with spring in between. So you get 10 times 10 kilograms. And then at high frequencies, you only have 10 kilograms. Factor of 10, you go to high frequency.
Okay, but you see, of course, in this case, this kappa only needs to be equal to 1 over r single second carrier transmission. So if the single second carrier or the single second neural has very low transmission, in principle, you can also get a small kappa enough to get a significant internal squeezing.
Mm.
Well, because all you need is just the kappa times r src equals 1 to get the internal squeezing principle. That's a stress threshold for get a large squeezing. I understand you can use like a small mass. And then get a formosity and frequency, or you can just make the single second transmission, calorie transmission low. That's also part of it.
So how come your kappa doesn't depend on the power? The kappa.
That's not the power. I assume like 1 megawatt power, sorry. So it's like proportional power. Of course, finally, we have this single second carrier loss. Let's discuss this. And if one, as you can see, because that just comes from the fact that this the loss right at the ITM. And because the our carrier has very low battery, and all the high frequency signal is effectively, filtered by the our carrier core. And this means that any loss, just right after the ITM, we had a huge effect on high frequency. That's why you can see the loss increases functionally like in terms of proportional frequency. That's I think one of the issues. But you may be wrong, and also that this loss can be made small, then that's very good. Otherwise, no matter what you do, what kind of magic you play in the single second carrier to the unstable theory of relation, you cannot go around this image.
So in this equation for SRC loss, you have R minus as the square root. Then what I suggested to Rana is maybe increase R minus a little bit and then lose here, but not as bad as at low frequencies. Because at low frequencies, sort of refractive noise scales is finesse linearly.
Yeah, I see that.
Okay, so we move on. Then the next question was how much can the voyage sustain in the arms? Do you know something? How much power in the arms can the voyage sustain?
We have never found a real limit. So the I had some student do this radiation pressure analysis for the ambulator stability.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with that result?
We used some result on this in the past. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was there was no ambulance stability after 3 megawatts.
Yeah, I mean if you look at your own plots you can see that basically if you go up to even the 9 megawatts, I think nothing's gonna happen with the 200 kilogram mirror. Nothing goes on.
So up to 5. So around 5 megawatt there is an instability, but it's very small, so it's even fine.
This is nothing.
But then you see the point is that if you go to higher frequencies, then all these things they all flatten out. So even if you go to 20, this will be small.
So I'm saying there are the three things, which is the cooling, parametric instability, and this thing. These are really the three issues. And then there's something technical, like what's the biggest laser you can build or something. But in this one, I assume we'd have really like a 600 watt laser. And the way to have a 600 watt laser is to basically add 3 lasers is 200 megawatts. So it has to be this coherent recombination thing, which is going to be very unpleasant. But anyway, it is what it is.
But I think one thing possibility would be if you increase alkalinity a little more, then you can more or less.
It's just not going to help for above kilohertz.
But then you can ask the question: what is the power that I need? Because you see, SRC was also goes down with R power.
Yeah, this is just numerically optimized.
Yes.
So this gives the best possible thing at 3.3 kilohertz. So you can play all these games in your mind, but you'll lose because this is the global optimum.
Well, you see there is, what is your cost function?
3.3 kilohertz.
Yeah. So then you see if you use this Schwarzschild resonance, you end up with design.
It's already in there as a parameter.
Well, then I don't see how it can be true because you see this is.
You think your design is the right one.
No, I'm just asking, why are you optimizing in terms of this peak at 3.5 kilohertz?
I don't know. Why does your optimizer return that peak?
Optimizer return this peak because we specifically ask to get the best possible sensitivity at 5 kilohertz.
Yeah, I didn't go for 5. I went for sort of, and based on the sort of merger waveforms that people are showing, there's a broad uncertainty. So I would say instead, what we want is a really good sensitivity from 3 to 4 kilohertz or 2.5 to 4 kilohertz or something like that. And so it's not as much of a notch, it's more like just getting the broadband sensitivity in the kilohertz band.
You see, that's our sensitivity for 7 megawatts. So it goes quite
I don't think it's going to be a good choice because if you have any redshifted BNS, you just won't get it. You'll use this to get all the close BNS, I guess. Which maybe that's not.
Redshift is one such problem.
You just don't care. Yeah.
But I mean, we won't have a chance. I mean, what do you mean? It's just we have customers here.
Yeah, that's you. I don't have any customers.
You don't have. This is exactly my question. So what should be the voyage arm power so you can see on
this? I limited the laser power input to be 500 watts.
Yes, I understand. Like what should be the arm power so you see similar to our design on your portion terminals all the way to 3 kilohertz?
I'm just telling you, it's not optimal. You think you're better than my global optimization code, but you're not.
You see, you are saying that your global optimizer is better than this equation.
It is.
Okay.
This equation is so this is the problem. When people show me their equations, I tell them they better justify it versus the numerical code, which is more honest.
Greek also has that equation inside from Yang's paper.
Yeah, it's you know, the optimum is based on the cost function. Like I just keep repeating the same things.
Alright.
It's a broad cost function, this is the optimum.
So future work need to reoptimize Voyager.
Yeah, you can do it. I sent you the link to the code and you'll get the same answer.
Okay.
Because all you're gonna do is hit return the same way I did.
Okay. I think this question goes to Zhao.
Which one?
Oh wow, you don't see it.
Okay,
oh.
I see.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Projector doesn't show if I underline
something.
You can do it near the projector.
Yeah, I cannot tell exactly now, but I will work on it to give you the result.
So you're just showing the
what's
the
reader. Yeah, this is only damage. We're measuring to really without including some noise.
Okay, I think next question I already answered. So how do you prepare thermal lens on the deep sphere? So the current number is 50.
No, that's
how much.
That's too much. So in the
that's only backed by intuition, it's not reliable.
So in our optimization, we need 3. Is 3 good enough? Can you do 3?
Directly on the base? Yeah.
Okay. Can you do 5? Okay, maybe you need to see more.
Yeah.
I think the answer to all of these questions is the invited speakers don't need to go do the work that they were supposed to do.
That is true.
Yeah. Go calculate some real stuff.
Okay, I think this question will also discuss it. Yes, you can use. But you can stabilize CO2 in.
Well, why CO2? Why not just do the ring here?
Why not do ring here instead? So, because we asked how much can be correct using this fancy ring here, and I don't know if we have an answer.
As much as you want. Heat is heat, man. What are you talking about? Who cares about what's the wavelength of the heating radiation?
Well, I mean, you need a precise pattern.
Yeah, make a precise pattern.
Maybe you need like 1 billion points or so.
Your heating pattern is going to be Gaussian, at least for uniform absorption. Your heating power is Gaussian,
okay.
And then there's an optimum ring gear pattern, which is not the one we're using now, which will give you the best. Right.
Yeah, why don't we use that?
Yeah, these are good questions. You should put that one in there. What were the people thinking about when they designed this so-called advanced logo?
Okay. Okay, so how we compare optical walls in pure silica and silicon in single recycling packaging? I think this was already discussed by So Rana just answered this question. Okay. Oh, this is an interesting one. How can you combine low frequency and high frequency? So that's actually interesting because for few silica, it turns out that increasing SLC finance. You will also benefit at low frequencies because your boundary radiation pressure noise becomes smaller even though your power is high. But then you have this angular instability problem. But then if you have heavier masses, then it's all manageable. But for Voyager, another problem comes from the
Not really. I mean, it doesn't matter for the neutron star equation of state.
Yeah, right. But then you see, the question is, can we combine low frequency and high frequency design?
Yeah, we'll just put them in different cities.
Okay.
No harm, is it? So everybody in the world is going to have their own gravitational detector. They can all choose whatever band they want to run.
Okay.
Then maybe like Italy and India can be low frequency, and America can be high frequency.
Mm. Okay, so this is interesting. What is the optimal detector length for neutron stars? So I think Rana mentioned that frequency noise is not an issue.
You pointed out 40 kilometers is the worst for neutron stars, because you're going to have the free spectral range right at the merger frequency.
So we're not sure about that if there's not issues with control, because...
No. Besides control, I assume 40 kilometers just gives you a null at the merger. So
it's complicated, though. It's direction dependent.
Yeah, but for certain directions, you're going to get zero merger signal.
But for other directions, you do very well. And if you if you see out a little bit further, then you get this volume averaging effect. Like, it's better to be, you know, see really far away in some directions and not well at all in other directions, because...
Why? I mean, for the merger, don't we just want to get the best SNR for all the close signals? Who cares about distance for...
It depends whether you're trying to see the most things or you want to get the loudest average signal.
No, I'm just talking about the merger frequency. So to get the most things, we just want to optimize the 100 hertz where the integrand is maximized. For this high frequency business,
it's still you'd have to average over all directions to get them.
Yes,
I think the noise curve is.
No, it just doesn't matter at 3 kilohertz.
If
you want to get the most things, you just want to maximize this noise from 50 to 500 hertz.
Right. I'm just saying that having the FSR there is not necessarily that bad.
Not for the most things, but just for the merger.
Even
study.
For the merger study,
Why?
You recall, we looked at the optimizing the.
But it was a little telling at the post-merger.
Just the post-merger. So looking for where to find the best, this is related. How do you get the best post-merger SNR averaged over sky locations? And it doesn't peak and then fall off really fast at, you know, as the FSR goes through the post-merger peak, is my memory. Maybe we can pull up the plot probably.
Yeah,
it's
here. So the plot we produce here is using the minimax cosmonics. So he's assuming that the cosmonics has a maximum noise level, the 1 to 4 kilohertz.
No, I think it's average.
Yeah.
Average for the sky.
Average is
the
frequency range.
How would you find the optimal length? So indeed, when FSR, you see, so around this length, like around.
Do you guys have a plot of the antenna pattern at the FSR?
We do, yeah.
You can show it.
I can show it on.
For the 40 kilometers, right? Care about
that. I think the
there's a paper by media.
This one? And kind of better.
Frequency. Yeah, but he has some other problems which is
So what, actually, what's the name? What's the title of the
So Francisco has it.
Just tell me what's the number.
The number is 1708.06843.
Like this?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Rana wanted to see the sky maps showing the antenna pad. That those. So it's complicated, but do you have your
It's yeah, it's simple with plus three.
Yeah, you can just provide it in the lower axis.
So the white ones are the nulls.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also the bar is up to 0.3 instead of 2.1. So it's the also the scale also rescaled. It's also rescaled.
So this
CG. So it doesn't really go to red, it just goes to this light yellow everywhere. It's 1/3.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so the maximum
is
1/3.
The top one, the red is up to 1.
Yeah.
The low one up to 0.3. So
yeah. It's kind of weak.
Yeah, I think this one represents it pretty well. For phase down binders, you have zero response.
But it's really important to average over sky.
Yeah, exactly. And then for some.
Really, what I was just saying is instead of 40, 30 or 50 might be better. That's all.
Can you send tell me where to go to find it? Or.
Then you just slightly move it away from this worst place.
It's so we think the worst place is
Jupiter.
32 kilo.
It's in the cluster.
What? Oh, the cluster's down, actually.
So this plot shows the sensitivity to average calibration. So that your...
this is the merger thing?
But we get if we have a different cost function, we get a different a different shape.
That's true.
I bet you if I use another cost function, I get an even different shape.
This is not a super resolution.
Yeah, I want to get that one to show the.
So this is like cost function for that one.
No, but that's not what the wagon and river look like.
Well, it's just. Well, you have this behavior, so right? You just
minimize
the maximum point.
No, but all I have is from
there. This doesn't.
What about on the burn?
This is the only one I have to do.
Somehow you want to uniformly lower the noise.
I mean, that's one choice. This is a suboptimal choice.
That is debatable. What's in the optimal?
Of course, it's debatable. Yeah.
So we're having trouble connecting to the Caltech cluster, but Francisco has a similar plot where instead of.
Maybe he can't bring his computer.
He can't log on to get his plot, and it's only on the cluster. But
you can SSH to Quantum's phone.
It's not we can get on the web, the Caltech cluster where his plot lives is down. But
it's the same SSH problem I was having.
I see.
So an SSH port is blocked by...
Oh, you know what? In that case, I can, I have a VPN we can use to Monash. So give us a second and we'll pull up Francisco's plot.
They did block my Caltech VPN too. I tried to VPN too. Yeah,
why is the Caltech blocking perimeter?
It's perimeter is blocking SSH and VPN ports.
Okay, we're live, so where should I go?
Here.
Is it Jupiter?
Yeah, users.
Or is it users or Jupiter?
Yeah Jupiter, all that's Jupiter.like at Caltech.tdu.
I'm there.
It's users, Francisco.
No, come back. Maybe it was just a cache page.
But if you remember, you can just go.
Yeah. So, what was the? Remember what the exact? It was SNR, the post merger remnant was the virtual access and erases.
So, it was count versus arm length, basically.
The number of at the number of events with SNR greater than 5.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ronnie, you didn't want a number of events, but it's number of events that are post-merger detections with SNR greater than 5. So it's not just counting in spirals. And it looked something like, and this is length, and this was number, and it looked something like, this is kind of my, this is what you remember too? So it didn't go down. So the
I'll just say what I was saying. I think for counting events, there's one metric, which is valid and final. And then there's another one, which is if we want to get ultimate resolution of the post-merger signal, and that's a separate metric.
This, it's not so, I tentatively agree, but it's not so simple. This is not just counting events in a sort of naive sense. This is counting events that for which you see post-merger signal. So it would be interesting to see what is the loudest SNR you get, but that's neither of these.
I would say this is just not the right metric. That's because
it's a metric. I agree that we should plot this one too, but neither of these tell us that right now, right?
Right. What I'm just trying to say is that the right metric, one interesting metric is how well can I characterize the post-merger signal? And that is not, it's not directly proportional always to the number of events I see.
And maybe it has an optimal, maybe it peaks and it's not 40 and maybe it's 40. We just have to plot it and check.
Yeah, I very much doubt it's 40 since, because of that antenna pattern, you just miss.
Well, but I would have thought, naively, I would have thought that one would have turned over too before we made the plot, because the FSR does move through the post-merger signal, but it doesn't turn over.
Right, because it doesn't affect the SNR at all, the detection. It just affects the SNR of the post-merger signal.
This is just the post-merger signal.
How do you define that?
We're integrating from a contact frequency.
From, so like 1.5 kilohertz up all the way?
Yes.
Yeah, so that would be dominated by 1 to 2 kilohertz.
But it's all part of the post-merger signal.
I share this concern, and that's why I think it's very important that Andreas teams up with us, and then we actually can roll this to physics.
Speaking of, this is a good time, if I can put up another plugin and show something.
Do you have it?
Yes. So this is a paper that actually Andreas is on.
Can you put a hash in the other place?
Sure. If you please.
He's just quietly sitting here. He doesn't really care what he looks at. No.
What are you talking about?
Shh. Says, do I want to update?
So, one of the things that came up from our discussion earlier is that if you use the, your fiducial design, you only see, maybe 1-2 events per year with a match selector signal to noise ratio greater than 5 with post-merger waveform. And it was pointed out by several people that, okay, well, that's the match filter SNR. It doesn't prove that you can actually say anything about the signal, but actually, so Andreas is on a paper with Katerina something.
Tatiano.
Thank you. And they used a burst algorithm in order to reconstruct the peak frequency. So this is a much more robust way of, you don't need to know exactly what the post-merger waveform is in order to do this. And the takeaway message is that they can get an interesting constraint. So you want this to be, this is the posterior distribution on the peak frequency, and you want this to be peaked so that you can say something about different equations of state. And when they have a matched filter SNR of 4, they basically can't say anything. But when their magic number is 5, so once they get to 5, they have this very nice peak, even though they don't know exactly what they're not using the matched filter templates in order to say this. This is just using burst stuff. So I think this is really encouraging. I was a little bit pessimistic.
Are you even sure this is a detection? Like it's 5. And this is a like wavelet method. Are you sure there is any post-merger signal there?
10. So my understanding is that they integrated from about 1.5 kilohertz and said that the SNR is the matched filter SNR above 1.5 kilohertz. But then they reconstruct it, not using matched filters, but using phase wave, so wavelengths.
Yeah,
and they have two detectors.
And I guess they must have, yeah.
Yeah, I guess this is network SNR, but yeah, my question is, what's the chance that you're not, there is not nothing there, but you still detect these kinds of
things? Oh, this, yeah, the pipeline's been used for other analyses, so I think we can trust that it's not, and it keeps the right place. The black line is the true injected value.
Yeah, but what is the false alarm rate? For example, if you the network SNR is 5, but you...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, I wouldn't think of the problem that way because you know that there's a signal there because you detected the in-spiral. So the only question is, what is the true value of frequency afterward?
But it could be there's no post-merger signal. I mean, you just pump cups.
I think that you have maybe already an idea if you expect post-merger signal or not. So I think for some detections, you can be quite sure that you should expect a post-merger signal.
But if there is no post-merger signal, then you would have no peak there.
You get this one.
So
it's blue.
Exactly.
One.
So all this idea about, you know, trial factors, etc., essentially disappears here.
Yeah,
because you know where to look. Of course, if you are unlucky and it's a period where there are, you know, noise fluctuations there that obscure, and you are, you know, that's unlucky.
Yeah.
And they obscure in that few milliseconds the signal, then it's lost. But
yeah, that's why I'm asking what's the force on probability.
So we could worry about that, but the first order, the point I wanted to make is that I was worried when we were talking about this earlier, the SNR 5 might not be good enough. You could see something with a mesh filter SNR 5, and then you would try to look for it with a burst search, and you just wouldn't see anything. But apparently, it's good enough. T-someone has already done this calculation. So the metric that we've been using already for SNR equals 5 is good enough that you would be able to measure the peak frequency to about, you know, let's say 100 hertz.
Yeah, usually these peaks are very sharp, so the Q factor is really good. So even if you moderate SNR.
I still would have thought that you needed, you wouldn't be able to get wavelengths. But apparently they only use like a couple wavelengths to do this reconstruction. So apparently you can fit these, even though these waveforms look super complicated to my eye, you can reconstruct them with just a handful of wavelengths.
I mean, but if you, I mean, just to reassure you, if you remember 15.09.14, we did the full mesh filtering reconstruction of the signal using, you know, coalescing binaries templates. But then we also ran a base star, and we reconstructed, and there are 5 cycles, there are 10 cycles.
That was SNR30. This would be SNR5.
No, that was SNR24. Yeah, but in that case, the base wave reconstruction tracks extremely well.
Yeah. I thought we would need something with crazy SNR, and apparently, you know. Anyway, here's the office, if you want. So I think that's good news for us.
So, but I think there, an important point is that you have 2 instruments. So, for example, what I was saying before, that you could have, you know, just one instrument in the network where you have, you know, this very high frequency sensitivity, but all the others are not as sensitive at high frequency. I think would really harm this particular technique.
Why?
Well, because you rely on the fact that you need, you are assuming that you have a coherent signal. So the assumption here is that GR is correct, you have this 2 polarization, and then you have a coherent signal in the 2 instruments. Of course, you do not make the additional assumption about knowing the phase.
But this is just the wrong historical period. This paper is about something like, what can we do in the next few years? When the which is the important thing in the next few years. But this high frequency thing is like 10 megawatts in the arms. That's like 15 years from now. That's at the case where the BNS SNR will be something like 300. It's not the SNR of a Q range.
No, but
SNR of the post-merger.
Yeah. No, I'm saying the like 40 kilometer detectors are so far in the future. It's not where the post-merger signal will be marginal. It will just be visible. But
therefore you assume that you are gonna do so much better than this fiducial design that people have been showing. Okay. Well, that's another story. So this technique will do even better.
Sure.
So I think.
Yeah. Well, at that time, but there is we have at least some. I don't know if it's going to be perfect, but it's some working phenomenological post-merger ready.
Well, it says 30 years.
I mean, we can just look at the data. The data will.
So, that's right. So you see, I hope that they are somehow wrong, okay, and that we'll discover in the post-merger some features that we didn't expect, simply because the physics is very complicated, and having, you know, all the physics in there, it's hard.
We're talking about 30 times better than the current machine. So it's like a factor of 10 better than advanced LIGO.
Current machines or the...
factor of 10 better than the advanced LIGO design.
Yeah, so my comment about this, showing this paper, was just meant to talk about, I guess, the 4 kilometer design from earlier, so I'm bouncing around a little bit, but just that I have been bothering me that this SNR5 thing maybe wasn't good enough, but in that context for the 4 kilometer stepping stone detectors, it does look like it would be good enough to do really interesting stuff. I agree, when you have SNR50, then you don't, you can actually see it wiggling.
Yes,
you
just fly.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, talking about physics, maybe Andreas, can you tell us how to do this?
How to do what?
Oh, okay, it doesn't do it again. Terrible.
Would we use it like standard, would it be like black hole parameter estimation, where we just run millions of neutron star mergers and then make a reduced order model and then do fitting to this post-merger waveforms that we detect? And that's how we'll infer all of the neutron star physics.
We don't have a working waveform.
No, future.
I guess what you would like to have ideally is some phenomenological model also. And that all these, or some of the parameters in this model tell you something about the physics. But I think we are still far away from any of these models.
Yeah, that's true, but you see right now we need to optimize the design, and this should be optimized by physics in the end. So again, right now we optimize some SNR for the waveform, but do you think that it would be optimal to change some physical parameter in your simulation and see like with what SNR this particular design can detect? Do you think it's feasible in terms of time?
I'm not sure if I understand. Then what you mean is changing a physical.
Yeah, okay, so what are your parameters? So when you run the simulation, what are your physical parameters?
Basically just two. I mean, the two masses of the neutron stars plus the equation of state, assuming that spin effects are practically negative.
Yeah, that's what I mean, the physical parameters of the equation of state.
Well, they are basically two different approaches. One is that you take a few of the microphysically described equations of state. The problem here is that there are not many available at the moment, like, let's say, a few 10. And they are all derived within different frameworks, right? So this is one idea. The other idea is that you take a model, a kind of model for the equation of state that uses a few parameters, like these piecewise polytropes. Like then you have, like, let's say, 5 parameters that are describing the whole equation of state in a simplistic manner. That you are then trying to connect your waveform with these different parameters. That's the other option.
Well, for example, in your talk you mentioned that, let's say, magnetic field doesn't change the resonances resonant frequencies, but it can change the Q factor. So this would mean that, for example, you don't have any magnetic field, and then you have a magnetic field 10 to the 10 Tesla. So you would expect some different in waveforms. And so what would be interesting is that what would be the SNR to the magnetic field in some sense for a particular detector?
Yeah, I mean, one could try to include this in some way, but that's not
the
very...
The magnetic field?
Yeah.
I think what Andreas is telling us is just that we can't, like the systematic errors are just overwhelming at the moment. You could change something and then measure, like see how well you're sensitive to that change, but that he wouldn't trust it is basically what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's certainly right, yes.
What about the phase transition, the inner core, you would also not trust it? Is there any physical parameter you would trust?
I mean, these are all models, right? And nobody knows, I mean, there's only one true equation of state, and nobody knows what...
I don't see what's the problem, right? We already have these waveforms, which are sort of best guess now, which basically say there is this post-merger signal going on at several kilohertz, and we have analytic estimates of F modes and that sort of thing. And sometime in the far future, we'll have very accurate numerical simulations. But if the models aren't working right now, why would we want to get predictions from those models?
Well, this is what I'm trying to understand. If we can extract some physics already now, but maybe
yeah, but we can. I mean, measure these frequencies, measure these peaks in the spectrum.
So, but
this tells you already something.
Dennis wants to go beyond phenomenology and get a more fundamental stuff,
yeah.
But then you're saying you can't. It's basically,
yeah.
You can only get the phenomenological things, you can't get at the microphysics. And
okay.
I think if Paul Askey was here, he would be saying the same.
Okay.
This is what he always tells us when we ask, like, well, what about, can you measure this or that? And he's like, no, you guys, you can't trust any of these things.
It sounds a little frustrating.
But the other problem is also, I mean, if you set up, for instance, some simple model of the equation of state, let's say you determine your model is essentially just the pressure at saturation density, twice saturation density, three times saturation density. Like this, you can cover all possible equations of state reasonably well with 5 parameters. Okay, and if you measure these. Or if you are able then to really connect your measured waveform with these 5 parameters, what does it tell you at the end physically? Knowing just the pressure at a given density is a lot of information, but it's for instance not telling you a lot about the real underlying physics, right?
Well, I see. I'm just trying to measure this to black holes. So you're taking some signal from black hole and then without extracting any information.
No, you extract information, but it's not so straightforward. The whole equation of state is a totally messed up system. It's a totally dirty system. Basically with an infinite number of parameters, if you are honest.
Okay.
Is it like hopeless in 50 years to?
Well, those days are 10 years.
I heard 30.
What I said, I mean...
Can you imagine a far future simulation where you could really test, you know, sort of the QCD things that Dennis is interested
in? Again, it depends. I mean, if we find some way to determine, for instance, the pressure at a given density. This does not tell us if the phase or the state of matter at this density is a QCD, is quark matter or if it's still electronic matter.
So when was first this binary chance acid simulation? Was that like around 2008 or something?
Say it again.
So when was the first complete binary chance star simulation?
The first were many, many years ago, the first fully relativistic ones were, I think, maybe 2002,
With matter.
With matter, yeah. It's Shibata.
Well, I mean, it's still, I think this area is still very new. I mean, in the sense that we have already made a lot of progress.
Yeah, you make a lot of progress, but you need to be aware that it's always a model and it will always be a model. And you will always have some systematic uncertainties.
That's, I mean, if not, we would never do any measurements. We would just get all of the true absolute physics on our computers for every single experiment we conceive. No reason to measure anything.
I mean, what you can learn from that, I mean, if for instance, I think we discussed it already on the first day, if for instance, there is a very strong first order phase transition taking place at, let's say, 5 times nuclear density. And if it's very strong, I mean, that's something that you will clearly see. I mean, we are speaking now about timescales of 10 years or so. At that time, you will measure the tidal deformability very well. And if you then get, for instance, a peak frequency, so this dominant post-merger frequency, that is much different from what you actually expected based on the tidal deformability, then there will be a very clear hint that there was a phase transition making the remnant much more compact than you actually expected just from a pure extrapolation from the tidal deformability. If there is such a drastic effect in nature, then we will measure something a nice effect relatively easily. If the equation of state is more boring at higher densities, then you will just measure what you actually already expected or get a confirmation.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, in this sense, we also discussed this, I mean, if you focus really on this dominant peak, then the key might be that you really get many different systems with different masses, because then the different masses probe different density regimes.
But it's all the same equation of state, I guess, right?
Yes, but a different regime in the equation of state that affects the frequency. And so the low mass system probe the low density or lower densities, the high mass systems probe particular the very high density regime.
Oh, I see what you're saying. This is the point that you won't, by looking at the tides, you're looking at lower densities because they're lower mass systems, right? Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think the last point is, I don't know if you want to do it, do we discuss the spatial noise free more, or is it not so good?
I don't know, I mean, I think it's pretty hard.
Very hard.
But maybe Rano has optimization, can run some optimization.
I will.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to just draw some curve right now. And
I think we can say basically the software that we're already using to calculate this interferometer noise curves, I think we can adapt it to this displacement noise treatment.
Yeah.
Because basically we can calculate the full matrix of inputs and outputs from all inputs to all outputs, and then do the frequency by frequency matrix inversion to make the fully displacement noise free outputs or optimize the signal to noise ratio at each frequency.
Yeah, it seems if you have long interferometers with high frequency in the future, you have to have these kind of new transfer functions anyway. So
I think there's an added piece that you didn't mention.
Which I don't understand.
Okay, I will mention.
Okay.
basically in the old displacement noise tree, which is the Chan Kawamura topology, the ancient way. Ancient.
Kawamura is more ancient than
that. Yeah, he is, that's right. In the new Vyachanan Adhikari method of displacement noise tree, our organizer has left. He got so scared by this. Yeah, anyway, I mean, there our method was that we have a thing which does the amplitude and phase, amplitude to phase and phase to amplitude conversion by having the Kalili cavity type things at the ends. And whereas this kind of picture only thinks about the, you know, displacement noise shows up as a phase modulation, which you can subtract by doing the 3x3 or 4x4 matrix. If you have the amplitude term, then the matrix is expanded by a factor of 2, because you have all the amplitude terms also. And so that gives you the more freedom to do this effect.
Maybe.
Well, that's absolutely, if you include amplitude, then you have twice as many signals. That's just the definition of quadratures. But I mean, the question about if they're low noise or if they're linearly independent or that sort of thing, that's, I don't know the answer to that.
I see.
And, you know, it's producing new degrees of freedom which you can use in your inversion.
Oh, so maybe then you can just have the ring cavity that I started from,
yeah,
have both amplitude and phase.
Yeah,
then you have four channels.
Yeah, you just have to put those little coupled cavities on the pieces.
Yeah, if you have four channels, you only have three displacement. Maybe that's already worked.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what I told you.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Alright. Whatever, I liked your diagram.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you see that I put your thing on Twitter?
For sure. Yeah. But I think this DFI seems it's not like it might or might not work.
This is one of the best outputs in this workshop so far. Yambe has an idea which might or might not work.
Well,
everybody else's ideas are either for sure it's going to work or for sure it won't work. This
no, I thought everybody else's idea will work.
Yours is the only honest one so far.
Well, I thought they all were very reasonable.
No.
Mine is like crazy.
I don't think so.
Well, you see, Yang Wei is more or less convinced by hypothesis.
Yeah, that's because he won't ever be the one building.
But, okay, so I guess, do we choose between high frequency and low frequency?
Yeah. Let's vote which one is better.
No. Shouldn't we do both, like one high frequency and one low frequency?
Yeah, if we have multi-depth.
Yeah, I thought with the X-ray, they have hard X-ray and soft X-ray, and they have all these different X-rays. Why should we have different frequency?
Well, we can have both. Here, in this workshop, we can both have both. Okay.
But we have LIGO, Virgo. LIGO has two, and there's LIGO India, there's Virgo, there's Cagra, there's five. So maybe three of them is high frequency and two is low frequency? Two are low frequency? I don't know. Is that...
No, you want three low frequencies.
You want
because I think you rely on those to get this kind.
But they're going to build the ET. Or at the Cosmic Explorer, right?
Using it?
I don't know. I mean, somebody's gonna build the ET and Einstein telescope. ET and the Cosmic Explorer. So those are the two that have also low frequency sensitivity. and then we have the two existing, and then we have three high frequency. I don't know.
Okay, I didn't realize that you were talking about 2030
or
2040 or 2050.
Oh, I see. So this is.
No, no, I don't know. I thought you were talking more about 2025.
Oh, I see.
Speaking about neutron stars, I think really focusing on the high frequency part may be more worth, because the in spiral might be a little bit boring at some point, because it gives you only one number basically, while the post-merger spectrum, although we don't understand all details yet of it, is much richer.
Andreas, what about my talk about populations? You see lots of events.
I spoke about neutron stars. I mean, of course, there is
neutron,
a lot of
you
other
see lots
physics.
Of neutron stars too.
Yeah, but this is more like more stellar. If you speak about the population, right? But I mean, if you want to do the connection to high density matter physics, then I would really advertise the kilohertz range. I mean, sure, there is a lot of other interesting stuff at low frequencies.
But even if we're thinking about the network in 2025, as you said, there are five instruments. And so assuming they all have comparable capabilities and sensitivities, if you pick two, and you keep all the others, broadband, and of course you get all the low frequency signal to noise ratio, etc. But then you pick two and you really hammer the high frequency part. I think you get, the best of both worlds.
Are there any other topics? Because I don't have any more questions on my list. Are there any other topics you want to discuss? We also don't have anything else on this program. So maybe Juan, you can say something final words.
Okay, I'd like to thank all the speakers, and also Will is not here, but also the supporting who made this workshop possible. So yes, thanks.
Yeah, thank you again.
Thank you to the organizers.